August 18th, 2025. Welcome to This Week in Waukesha, the podcast series. I am your host, Downtown Donnie Brown, coming to you from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown here in the Work Hub Studios in the Four Points of Downtown Waukesha. I'm joined, as always, by my extraordinary young, talented producer, the Mighty Max Martinson. And he is working out of the comfort of his home studio there in Milwaukee. And this is a Civic Media production in cooperation with WRJN, 540 AM. And Max, do you still go down to Radio Park there on Saturday mornings to help with Jim's show?
Yeah, I'm there every Saturday still from 9 to 11. So,
you know, it's a bit of a clip down to Racine, but it is really... It's fun working in a professional studio like that. I felt like when I would go down there on Saturday mornings, I kind of felt like Howard Stern, you know, or one of the big time hosts. So, but anyway, a lot going on, a lot of rites of passage or season, you know, as we approached the end of summer, the school year will begin soon, September 2nd here in Waukesha. High school football will start this Friday night. In fact, our beloved Black Shirts will be hosting Milwaukee Lutheran at Ken Holub Stadium. That's also alumni night, too. And the school pulls out some good stops there. They close off Tenney Road, put up a big tent, and have some beverages and snacks and live entertainment for all the alumni to come and celebrate the beginning of another football season for our beloved Black Shirts, their second season in the new Parkland, their new conference, the Parkland Conference. And so really looking forward to that starting. I know this week we had some disruptions with the flooding, and of course our hearts go out to all those families in the Milwaukee area that were impacted by it. I know there were some in Waukesha, but not nearly as bad as those in nearby New Berlin. And of course, as you get closer to the city, it's, yeah, pretty rough. But we're also approaching Labor Day. Labor Day weekend's coming up, kind of the last, you know, long holiday weekend of the summer. And but also an important time to reflect upon, to celebrate the progress of labor in this country, or the history of it, the heritage. I know organized labor has... membership has gone down in recent years. But it seems to have been holding steady about 10%. That's the rate I have as of 2023. But there's been a noticeable resurgence in interest and activity surrounding organized labor, particularly among younger workers and in specific sectors like tech and healthcare. And there's a significant increase in public approval of unions and a willingness to vote for them. And many Americans view the decline in union membership as detrimental to both the country and working people. And so to talk more about this is a man whose career has been as a union carpenter, and then towards the last, 15 years as a union organizer. I'm really, really proud to introduce one of my oldest friends, going back to my New York State roots here, Jim Macon. Jim, good evening. How are you?
Hey, Danny. How you doing? Thanks for that intro.
Sure.
Yeah, it was about 15 years. I worked as an organizer. I was a straight up carpenter for the other 30.
Yeah. And Jim comes to us from the comfort of his home in beautiful Queens, New York. Jim's a Mets fan, so he's licking his wounds from the Brewers sweep a short while back, but he's still got the bragging rights from their triumph in the playoffs over the Brewers last year. And so
it's
still a bitter pill for us, although the way they're playing, it's really been another fun season so for Pat Murphy's crew. But, Jim, if it's okay, let's start with how you got your approach to become a recruiter, or, I mean, a union rep. I know that it's an interesting story, if you don't mind sharing.
Sure, Don. No problem. It's hard when you recap your life to not have a little
stuff
about it. But you know, I started out like every other, you know, guy in construction. You kind of fall into it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, you know, being able to make projects and stuff like that. And I worked the first decade up in Western New York. It was non-union, and I think I had the same mindset as everybody did in the 80s in New York, that, you know, the unions weren't that good because we had just seen the steel plants all implode. And
we lived through that, yeah.
Yeah. So unions at that point, you know, they had a black eye. So yeah. I really wasn't ever seeking out a union. And I met my wife in 94. I moved down here in 97. And in 97, you were union or you weren't really in the construction industry. They had a firm grasp on it. So, you know, I joined up not realizing what I was joining up with. You know, more like, you know, I'm just going to get in. And over the next 10, 15, 20 years, my life has become, you know, excellent results. You know what I mean? For things that you don't really think about. You know, right now, I'm currently 58. I'm retired. The union's able to provide health care and benefits, you know, dignified retirement. You know, you put the time in, you get out the other end. And that's priceless. And that's something I think is lost when people talk about unions. You know, everybody looks for the short-term gains and people complain about, oh, I have to pay, you know, dues. Why am I doing this? I don't like what they're doing. But you know, you have to look at the big picture.
And, you know, Jim, you mentioned earlier about the manufacturing sector in our hometown of Buffalo being wiped out there in the early mid-80s as we were approaching high school and seeing friends of ours, their dads having to relocate for 1 or 2 years to like Oklahoma or Cleveland or somewhere. Our whole family's being uprooted just so dad can get the pension. Mm-hmm. And as a good, you know, kind of a reference for the local listeners, if you haven't seen it, you have to see the documentary about the 82 Brewers that won the American League back when they were in the American League and then went to the World Series. And it was called Just a Bit Outside, as Euchre used to like to say, was the name of it. But in those first 10 minutes, they talk about the state of Milwaukee's economy in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And they had their share of plant closings and or downsizing. And so, you know, Milwaukee suffered a little bit, not like we did in Buffalo. I mean, Milwaukee, it's a very dynamic area and had a little bit more of a diversified economy than we did that they were able to weather the storm. Whereas for us, it really was a huge watershed in our city's history. And it never really came back. You know, it's really become more of a service economy. And that's hard to feed families with, you know, service economy incomes. Is that fair to say, Jim?
Yeah, and that, and just I don't think the infrastructure was there for a service economy. And Buffalo had really come up from its roots being an industrial blue-collar city.
Yeah.
I mean, Bethlehem Steel, how many people are they employing? 35,000?
Yeah. I guess it's not Bethlehem Steel plant in the world.
Yeah, and I remember the shifts. You'd time your traffic around it because you didn't want to be on the roads when they went from first shift to second or second to third. So, you know, they had all their apples in one cart. I don't think they anticipated anything changing. You know, Lackawanna, other suburbs, you know, you go out there, every other corner had a bar, local bar. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was supported by the guys that got off shift. So, in that sense, you know, it's tough when a business, you know, changes like that.
Yeah. And you also had Republic Steel and you had the General Motors foundry plant in Tonawanda, which was one of the more prominent GM manufacturing facilities in the big three universe, for sure.
Sure. And the Ford stamping plant down by Hamburg. I think they're both still there, right? Just not the same.
Then, you know, my family, it was the grain milling that had pretty much been wiped out by the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, a lot of, you know, people blamed organized labor because of the wages that they were commanding, but it had much more to do with management's missed opportunities on research and development when things were going really well in the post-war economy. And, you know, books have been written about it. And what we've seen, like in the 80s, I can establish when unions partnered with management and profit-sharing opportunities that saved jobs and saved companies. And so it, living in Chicago, the concept of union oftentimes is compromised when you go to like McCormick Place or any of these big convention trade show venues where you'll see like two or three guys pushing a chair with wheels or an electrician that comes to investigate a problem at a booth and says, this is what's wrong. I got to go back to my shop and get it. You know, I'll be gone an hour and he's getting paid for it. And just like things are always very upsetting, but it does a disservice, especially to the guys in the building trades like you that basically built our great cities and our nation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're always going to have stories. You're always going to have good guys, bad guys. You know, on the whole, I think unions, the positive influence they have outweighs those stories. I mean, you go into the private sector, you got people that have jobs that, you know, same thing. They're and they don't really, you know, they're just collecting the paychecks. I mean, that does happen.
Yeah.
And nobody can deny that. But
yeah. Oh, I had a customer who their server was also being used, you know, the money, the profits were being used to set aside funds for their kids' college tuitions. And all that was being managed on the company server, when the smart thing would have been to, like, do that offsite. You know, like, you have a personal, you know, you have personal financial people to take care of your family stuff, but they did it all in-house. And it caused a great deal of disdain among, you know, the rank and file. Like, where, you know, where's our kids' college fund?
Yeah, no, I know. It's, you know, you use the union to speak up for people that can't speak up, you know. And I always remember, you know, working up in Buffalo my first couple of years, I did not ask for a raise. I was, you know what I mean? You're very lucky or happy to get a job, you know, when you get a job and you don't really want to get a raise. But then if you don't speak up for yourself, they don't really pay you more. You know what I mean? They get just enough to keep you going. And that's I think, what a lot of people today are forced into. Just enough to you know, to pay the bills and that's it. And, you know, maybe a little bit more if they cry loud. And you know, the union, you know, when everybody speaks together, he gets such a better deal. I think people are noticing that, like you say, in those industries, when you go to the tech industries and the people like that, they realize that, you know, speaking as one is much easier than one person, you know, going in and everybody else, you know, being dissatisfied. So there's a lot of a lot of things to think about when, you know, when you get a union. But, you know, a lot of, I think, like I said, I think our mindset for our generation was, you know, well, it's not worth it. But I think it's turning around when you see what happens when business has its own, you know, its own way all the time. All of a sudden you're a number, you know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And labor has always been a struggle. You know what I mean? It's a labor movement. It's not a labor sit still. And I think that's the problem that occurred, you know, in the steel plants, is that they were comfortable. They didn't want to move forward or sideways or backwards and everything.
A lot of complacency, sure.
And, you know, I've run into this as an organizer. You know what I mean? You just can't win all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Sometimes you have to accept that maybe, you know, you're going to come in with a loss or you're going to come in with something, at least keep the ball moving forward.
Yeah. Yep. We're talking to Jim Macon, retired union representative with the Carpenters Local. What's the local there in New York City?
Well, there's actually 7 locals. I was part of Local 45 in Queens.
Local 45.
But I worked for the district council, and they handled Queens, Bronx, Brooklyn, the 5 boroughs.
You're a big time, Jim.
it's a big time industry.
Sure is.
It's no joke. You know, you're talking, you know, I think last year there was $11 billion in construction.
Right.
I mean, that's you know, amounts that stagger everybody's mind. You know what I mean? There's a lot of work going on in New York City.
Yeah.
A lot of hands in the till from the top all the way down to the bottom. So it's an interesting, you know, you go back to the origins of New York, you know, in those movies, the gangs from New York, that's pretty much how it was, you know, it was scary times back then.
Yeah.
You know, organizing was a much more dangerous game back then.
Certainly.
You know, for my part, you know, it was much, thank God, much more civil. You know what I mean? There wasn't that many threats. Yeah. But, I think my job was more a social, I can't believe I've forgotten the word, you know, more social justice than anything else. You know what I mean?
I say,
look at the conditions you're working in. You don't have to be like that.
You know, that's the thing, is there wouldn't be OSHA or any of these occupational safety or child labor laws, any of that, had it not been for organized labor.
100%. And OSHA, you know, is another thing. It saves lives, even though people don't want to hear it. And when you're young, you know, you think you're invincible. You know, you think, oh, I don't care, I can do that. They're, you know, who are they telling me to do this?
Sure.
Because you don't get injured. But once you get that injury, you realize, you know, nobody's looking out for me but, you know, me. So, you know, you need another watchdog out there to make sure that, you know, employers don't, you know, do what they do, you know, to make money. They turn their head and I'm not saying all employers. It just takes a couple bad apples.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bunch because they're all competing.
Yeah, yeah. A couple years ago, we had a similar guest. We had Stephanie Bloomingdale, who is the president of the do you know Stephanie? She's the president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO.
Okay. I've heard her name, without a doubt.
She's very well spoken, and we had a really great – one of the topics we honed in on was executive salaries, CEO salaries, and how they I forgot the percentage, but it's – I think it was something like 870% higher than the average skilled laborer.
Oh, that's always been – you know, when I was in the field, I always had that number quick by – you know, sometimes they're 10, 100 times more than the worker. And, you know, I've always been of the opinion that I want my boss to pull up on the job in a BMW or a Jaguar because, you know, a successful business means that you're going to be working all the time. But it's gotten a little extreme. I think, you know, and that's always the same. When you let people just take, you know, they keep taking and they keep taking. And if nobody says no, next thing you know, you get this huge disparity. You know, I'm not saying management doesn't deserve, you know.
Right. Our executives should be paid well, but not to an extent where it cripples, you know, the rank and file or people that are actually doing the heavy lifting.
Exactly. And the golden parachutes and all that stuff. That's
risking
all
their lives.
That came out. It's funny. You think about the 80s, Donnie, right?
When
they had the He-Man universe, the men of Wall Street that came in and raided, and everybody was like, wow, that's amazing. You know, when you do a little dig down in it, you found out they looked for companies that had pension plans, and they came in and bought the company, you know, built up the, you know, what their assets for the pension plan was, took a loan out, and then just let the company die and kept a huge slice of the pie. So, you know, it wasn't that impressive what they did. You know, they weren't, you know, doing more than just pirates, you know, stripping companies. And that led to what we have now, I think, where we have a system where, you know, you're kind of like fighting for everything, you know what I mean? Sure. Just for your basic things that you need to live. You know, healthcare is very important. I didn't have healthcare probably until I was 26, 27. Wow. You know, I just, they weren't offering it. I was afraid to ask for it, you know, and, you know, when you're healthy, it's fine. But, you know, not everybody is healthy.
Thank God nothing bad happened to you on the job.
Knock on wood.
A lot of things could have happened.
Yeah. And I always thank God I was able to find a union and start getting these benefits. So it's something, you know, I once I got it, I realized how much it was worth. And I realized how much, you know, I didn't speak up for myself. And that's kind of drove me in my career to when I spoke with workers, you know, to just say that. My biggest... not selling point, but I think the thing that hit home the most workers is, you know, they would say, oh, I'm doing good. I'm making, you know, $40 an hour. Why do I need a union? I said, no, I understand that. That sounds good. But where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Right.
Where do you see yourself in 15 years? You know what I mean? Because I'll tell you where you'll be in 15 years if you work, you know, and have benefits and you have all these things. And where do you think you'll be at this job? And it really floors a lot of them. A lot of them, you know, started to realize, hey, wait a minute. You know, I'm kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul here, and eventually comes around the other way.
Did your union have a scholarship fund for your children or for, like, you know, anyone that was
so most involved? Most unions that have been around a while, they start that comes from the membership. You know, all the money in the union comes from membership. So what happens is they'll have a scholarship fund, they'll have drives, just the basic social functions, you know, and it adds up. We have them,
but it's an incentive for recruiting good talent.
It is, but you know, they don't particularly pick anything for talent for that. The scholarship funds they have is for the kids.
That's what I mean. That, you know,
if you're
in the trades and you're looking maybe to switch over to a different trade or a different union, and knowing that there's that scholarship fund that may incentivize you if you've got a smart kid living under your house.
Yeah,
we're going to continue this discussion here in the second part of our podcast as we close down this first one with Jim Macon from the New York Carpenters Union District Council. Local 45, though, is where he cut his teeth. Yep. And really excited to continue this discussion on This Week in Waukesha, the podcast, as part of our upcoming Labor Day commemoration. So stick around for more here on This Week in Waukesha. And thanks for tuning in so far.